This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm going to be talking about my trip to Europe, and I'm joined here with a Konstantin von Hofmeister, who I met up with in Germany.
Ah, hello, how are you?
Excellent, I just got back a couple days ago.
All right, how does it feel to be back?
It feels all right.
Yeah, it was a long trip for... I think it was a long trip for you. How long were you over there?
I was there about a month.
All right. Okay. And which countries did you visit?
I spent the majority of my time in the Czech Republic. I visited Germany, Austria, Northern Italy, and Switzerland. I don't know if it counts as visiting, but I drove through it in the middle of the night.
No, that doesn't count.
No.
Sorry. Okay, it's like having a layover at an airport or something.
Yeah, I did have a layover at the London Heathrow Airport.
Yeah, but doesn't count either. So, anyway, you know how it is.
So, we met in person. That was in a town
Riesa.
Riesa in former East Germany.
Yeah, Riesa in Saxony. Yes, that's the headquarters of the Deutsche Stimme publishing house. Deutsche Stimme means German voice. It's the official newspaper of the National Democratic Party of Germany, and, well, the NPD, and their publishing house is based in Riesa. And I believe we visited the pan-European, sort of like pan-European Congress, where a lot of like nationalist organizations from different countries in Europe were present and gave speeches.
And did they invite you to give a speech?
No, they didn't. I was just invited as a guest.
But you have given a number of speeches.
Yeah, I've given... like a month before, I gave a speech in Thüringen, which is also in East Germany, the former German Democratic Republic. I gave a speech about the concept of Euro-Siberia, and two other guys gave speeches, one guy about Eurasia, and another guy about the concept of the white ethnostate.
Johannes Sharp?
Yeah, Johannes Scharf, he gave a speech about the white ethnostate. And, the speeches were held in a villa, in a small village in Thüringen. And, I was told that pretty much the whole population of the village is leans right-wing, so to speak, so they're all sympathizers. I would say, which is quite normal for East Germany, because they're generally more sympathetic towards so-called nationalist ideas.
Well, the MPD is that's fairly marginalized. There's the other party called Alternative für Deutschland, which is, it's more significant, but you're less sympathetic to them, even though they're more they have more electoral viability.
Well, I think I guess the NPD is too radical for most people in Germany. That's why they only got, I think, like 0.4-0.5% in the last federal election. But the AfD got 13%, which is pretty impressive for a so-called nationalist party. And now the AfD, the Alternative for Germany, is now the third strongest party in the German Bundestag, in the parliament. I think the difference between the AfD and the NPD can be summarized pretty quickly. I think the AfD is more of a conservative party, while the NPD is a real nationalist party. So the NPD always emphasizes the ethnic aspect of citizenship. So there's almost like the racial aspect. So basically, you have to be born a German with German parents. Otherwise, you could never be considered a real German, and therefore you shouldn't be a citizen of Germany. While the AfD is more of a conservative party that is more interested in culture and less the ethnic character of Germany. So they believe that you could theoretically assimilate even if you're racially different or ethnically different from the majority Germans, as long as you follow the ideals that are espoused by the German government and the German constitution.
And they're also tied in with the whole counter jihad movement.
Yeah, I think the AfD mostly focuses on Islam, so they don't really focus on like what I would term the racial swamping of Germany with racial aliens, because in my opinion it doesn't matter whether they're Muslims, Christians, Buddhists or Hindus, because Islam is not really the issue. The issue is that it's racially alien invaders, whether they're Muslims or not. But the AfD focuses mostly on Islam and says Islam is incompatible with German values and they're culturally too different, they're too far removed, and that's why it doesn't work and they shouldn't stay. And if they stay, they have to assimilate. They have to basically give up their religion if they want to stay in Germany and integrate completely.
So kind of a parallel to the Trump movement.
Yeah, I would say yes, because I think a lot of the AfD politicians admire Trump and they supported Trump during Trump's campaign, and a lot of them still support Trump. And yeah, I think it sort of mirrors the whole Trump phenomenon in the U.S.
So we'll get to the political issues later on in the show. I do want to cover my trip. So I spent the majority of my time in Brno. And Brno is a city of about 500,000 people. It's the second largest city in the Czech Republic. It's in the region of Moravia in the eastern part of the Czech Republic, and it's about a little over an hour north of Vienna.
Yeah, I've been to Brno several times.
Brno in Czech and Brno in German?
In German it's Brunn.
Brunn.
Brunn in German, which is like B-R-U umlaut N-N, and I think in Czech it's Brno, which is, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, which is B-R-N-O. Yeah.
That's right.
So, I was there last year, actually, in November. There was some kind of nationalist conference that I was invited to, where Nick Griffin was a speaker and Tomislav Sunic was a speaker and several other people. And, I don't know, have you heard of this conference? It was last year.
Yeah, I heard about it from you and a number of other people.
Yeah, well, it wasn't bad. It was on a mountain in a hotel, got a nice view of the city. Because Brno has a very nice old town. I'm sure you're very familiar with it now.
Yeah, I stayed in the Centrum. It's called Centrum in the Czech Republic, basically the city center. And there's an old cathedral. It's close to the main town square.
So, I was just reading something about Brno a couple of days ago. And is that where they have the bones, like like a collection of skulls and bones, like in that church, a large collection? Did you see that when you were there?
I visited the main Gothic cathedral, which is pretty massive, and I went up to the top. It was built in the 14th. Or 15th century. I didn't notice the bone sculptures there. Maybe you told me about that. Maybe it's a smaller church.
Yeah, I don't know. I get, maybe it's somewhere else. Doesn't matter. But so, how would you characterize your stay in Brno? Like, what did you do all day, every day? Like, what did your average day look like? Because you were there for several weeks, right?
Yeah, I was. I went out a lot at night. There's a lot of nice restaurants and bars.
Did you eat any pork knuckles?
I did go to I don't know if it was a pork knuckle. I went to a Czech restaurant. It was kind of a brewery, and they had like a pork and horseradish.
Ah, that's the best. Yeah, and some spicy mustard, horseradish, pork knuckle.
Oh, yeah.
Very fatty, with a lot of fat, I guess, the meat, yeah? And Czech beer? Did you imbibe?
Yeah, a lot of Czech beer.
Right. But did you drink any?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I think Pilsnerquell is pretty popular there. Or Budweiser, but it's a Czech Budweiser. It's nothing to do with the American Budweiser.
The American company actually sued the Czech company Budweiser, but they failed.
Yeah, they lost, because I think the Czech Budweiser is named after the town where it's made, which is called Budvar in Czech.
Well, some maps it's called Budvar, Budweis.
It's
also called Český Budy Jovice.
Yeah, I think because Budweiser, the Budweiser is a German name, and Budvar is a Czech name, I think.
So that city was part of the whole Sudetenland.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was part of Sudetenland, but there's a lot of like German cities in the Czech Republic, the German names that have since been Czechified, so to speak.
What was your overall impression of Brno when you visited?
You know, I was there the first time a couple of years ago. I think, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago, with my parents. And yeah, I don't know, we walked around the old town, stayed in a nice hotel, went out, had some nice Czech food, had lots of beers, and then all three of us had food poisoning the next day.
Really?
So yeah, it was all about diarrhea and everything.
I didn't get food poisoning in the Czech.
I'm not blaming the town as well. Yeah. I don't know, maybe a dirty cook or something, who knows. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, but other than that, yeah, only have positive memories, because nice cobblestone streets, and then we walked up some tower. I don't remember which tower. Do you remember any tower? But it wasn't a church. It was like maybe it was like some old city wall or something where they have
Could
a tower.
Be.
Do they have that? Anyway,
there's a lot of clock towers and
something like this. I don't remember, and I remember driving a car and driving down a one-way street and getting stopped by the Czech police. And,
It's very difficult to park. And
very difficult.
Yeah, in America, I complain a lot about the bad urban planning in America, where we have all these strip mall developments where these massive parking lots, and over there the city was originally built. I mean, it has a street grid that goes back to the Middle Ages, so that's way before the automobile. So it's almost impossible to find a parking space. And the police, what they do is they don't just give you a ticket; they put a brake in your car, so you have to call the police and then pay the fine to get that removed.
Yeah, if you're parking illegally, but I was driving down a one-way street, so I just got a ticket. I don't remember, it was like 30 euros maybe. But yeah, that's how it is. Right, yeah, but a lot of towns in Europe are like this. In Central Europe, you have all these old medieval towns that were designed for horses and pedestrians and tiny streets, and a lot of them are two-way now, and sometimes it's very difficult to go down a two-way street, which was never meant to be a two-way street. So, and if there's an oncoming car, what do you do? You have to drive up on the sidewalk a bit so he can pass. So yeah, that's how it is in those medieval towns.
Did you visit the Spielberg Schloss, which is up on a hill overlooking the city?
In Brno?
Yeah.
I think not. Yeah, maybe you can tell me about it.
It's an old,
I missed it.
An old fortress, which I think during World War II, the Nazis used it to keep communist prisoners, but it was built. I don't know when it was built. I think it also played a role in the 30-Year War when the Swedish military invaded the Czech Republic. But it's really old, and it's on a big hill. It's about an hour walk from the centrum, and there's a great view of the whole city.
Yeah, I don't think I visited that place. I don't remember. But like I said, last year when I was at the conference, I was in a hotel that took place in a hotel, which was also on sort of a hill which overlooked the town. So must have been close to it, maybe, I suppose. I don't know. But yeah, sounds nice. I'll check it out next time. Did you visit any other places in the Czech Republic?
I visited Prague.
Yeah, and what did you do there?
But I guess I'll talk more about Brno and then move on to Prague.
Okay.
So, in Brno, outside of the centrum, I'd say the city is, it's more working class. There's a lot of communist architecture. There's actually like a, there's like a giant nuclear power plant like right next to the downtown area.
Oh wow, I had no idea. Okay. Yeah, but I mean, nuclear energy is clean energy, so it's not a bad thing, really.
I don't think they have earthquakes there.
Yeah, probably not. Yes. But what you're describing is very common, like in these former communist countries, where you have like very beautiful old towns, and as soon as you step out of the old town, you have, I wouldn't say ugly, but a completely different style of architecture. Usually built like post-war, I think, like 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, like those blocks that are also popular in East Germany, with like workers' residences, so to speak. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, the communist buildings, the apartment blocks, they're just these kind of concrete squares and rectangles. The communist architecture in Moscow is a lot more interesting.
Well, it depends from which period. So some of it is exactly like what you're describing, just like prefabricated concrete slabs that were like just put together, sort of, you know, like Legos, almost like concrete Legos. Because like here where I am, I live in Moscow, and in Moscow you have beautiful Stalinist architecture, which is a neo-Gothic architecture from which was like from the 1930s until the early 1950s. Very beautiful, very ornate. But then you have like those buildings that Khrushchev, who came after Stalin, built, and they're built in like the 60s, 70s, and they're just what you're describing, very basic, very simple, and very, actually I would say very of very poor quality. And the current mayor of Moscow, Sobyanin, just ordered them all to be torn down, basically, because, first of all, they're very ugly, and second of all, they're unsafe because of the quality, so they want to put up new buildings instead of those communist buildings that were put up in the 70s.
Another thing that's interesting is in most American cities, the tallest structures are in the downtown area, but in Brno, they build the tallest communist high-rises are not close to the center, but they're actually on the outskirts bordering the countryside.
Oh, wow. What are these structures?
They're communist high-rise apartments, but they're right on the outskirts along the hillsides bordering the country.
And when were they built? Do you know, like which decade?
I'd guess the 60s and 70s, if I had to guess.
Okay. So how do they look, like aesthetically speaking?
Maybe around, 15 to 20 stories. They're all lined up along the hillsides. They're just kind of like concrete rectangles.
Okay, so nothing to write home about, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. In Moscow, they have seven, like Stalin built seven sort of like high-rises, almost like skyscrapers. They're called, well, in English, they're called the Stalin Seven Sisters. And I think one of them is a Moscow State University. The other one is the Foreign Ministry. Two of them are hotels. I think one of them is like apartments and offices and so on. But yeah, some of them are in the center, though. So, and some of them on the outskirts. But the tallest skyscrapers that they build in Moscow, which was started in like the early 2000s, which are not even finished yet, is Moscow City. It's like a business district, which is not far from the center, but it's very unique because it could be that something like out of America, like maybe Manhattan, like because it's all like steel and glass, something that Trump could build, and it's like, I don't know, all different styles, but all like one conglomerate, all in one spot. Yes. So you can see the silhouette from various vantage points in the city.
Are you talking about the ones that are on an island in the river?
It's not really an island, though. Like the river goes around it, but it's not an island. It's just
a peninsula?
On the other side of the river. Yes, it's not really an island. I think the river goes around it. It's a semi island. Like it's sort of an island, but not like a 100% island. But it's like the river sort of encircles it. It's pretty famous. Well, it's called Moscow City, or Moskva City, as they say here.
In Brno, they're building some high rises for mostly for tech companies. There's like a mini tech hub. A lot of American companies outsource their tech jobs and call center jobs there, but they're not that impressive. They're maybe about like 15 stories tall. They're what you might see in an American suburb.
Ah, okay. So yes, it's nothing special. I see. Yeah, the ones in Moscow are fairly impressive. It's like 40 to 50 stories. So, and I teach English here in Moscow. I have some lessons on the 31st floor with beautiful views of Moscow on all sides. So they have different classes for different companies.
Yeah. And I did visit the Burno Lake, which is out in the countryside, just right out on the outskirts of the city. It's very close, and there's forest nearby, and it's a really nice place to visit in the spring or summer. But it's interesting is that it's where the city gets its water, but people also use it to swim. Like in America, in California, you can't swim in a reservoir.
Okay, that's very strange. I also find it unusual, so I guess they purify the water after they take it out. Yeah, well, I suppose they must. Did you go swimming there?
No, just went for a walk.
I guess it was too cold? Did you dip your hand in the water?
No.
Okay, I see. Right, so where do you live, like, in Brno? Did you live right in the center or close to the center? Was everything walking distance?
Right in the center... pretty basically like walking distance from the main town square.
Oh, okay. So, and how did you get to the lake, for example? Is that walking distance to the lake?
No. It's about a 15 to 20 minute drive.
So you went by car, or did you take a bus?
By car.
Okay, I see. All right. So, why did you choose to go to Brno?
Because I have a contact there.
Ah, okay. So, you're staying with a friend?
Yeah.
Right, I see. Okay, and yeah, so you went from Brno to East Germany by car, yes, to that NPD conference.
Yeah, by car. The drive from Brno to Prague, it's only a two-lane highway, so it's a really bad highway, and there's really bad traffic. But then once you hit the German border, you get on the Autobahn, and it's much faster. But the infrastructure in the Czech Republic, as far as highways goes, is not—it's not as good, for obvious reasons, as like Germany or Austria, or even the United States.
Yeah. Sorry. What about the United States?
I'm saying the highways are just very slow.
Yeah, but in the United States they're also pretty slow. Like because you also have speed limits. Like in Germany, there's no speed limit on the highway. That's the difference. Because in the U.S., it's like what 65 miles per hour, I think.
Oh, that's true.
Usually. Yeah, but in Germany, there's no speed limit usually, so you can go much faster, like 100 miles, 120 miles per hour, no problem. Yeah. Usually, yes?
Yeah, the thing is, it's only a two-lane highway, which is, that's pretty unusual in the United States, except for a really remote area.
Right,
not for a major corridor.
Right. In Russia, it's the same, though. So I think it's, like, generally an East German thing. It's like, poor highways. Haven't invested enough yet in infrastructure or roads. I'm not sure if it's necessary, though. Like, what do you think? Do you think it's necessary to invest, like, say, billions and hundreds of billions of dollars in new roads and new highways? Or should they focus, say, like, more on, I don't know, high-speed trains or maybe the Hyperloop, even? If that's
yeah,
a new thing.
I agree they should invest more in high-speed rail.
Yeah, so what do you think? I think the Hyperloop, do you think that's that could be a thing, like in East Germany, like in Russia, for example?
Oh, Elon Musk's idea. I don't know if that's... I don't know enough about it. I think it makes more sense to invest in high-speed rail.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sure, because I read some articles that high-speed rails are, I don't know, becoming obsolete, and Hyperloop's a new thing, because it's like 2.5 times as fast as the fastest high-speed train available right now. But, yeah, like you said, I also don't know enough about it, just read about it, just wondering, since we were talking about infrastructures and bad quality of highways. So I'm wondering if it's even worth investing in. Yeah, that's all.
And I took the train from Prague to Brno, and that was actually kind of slow as well, but...
I took the same train once.
Yeah, that was kind of slow, but no worse than the United States. But it's weird because they... I accidentally sat in first class, and then they kicked me out, and I ended up sitting in this area where there's no seats. You just have to kind of sit or stand on the ground.
Why didn't you go to second class? I guess all the seats were taken or something.
That is second class.
Yeah, but I'm also... Ah, oh, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but second class also has seats, just not as good quality, I guess, yeah?
No, they said that was second class.
All right, so you didn't get to sit down?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, right. I see. Yeah, because I went first class, I remember, when I went from Prague to Brno, because my friend bought the tickets. That was very nice of him. Yeah, and I think on the way back, yeah, we went... He bought the tickets, so first class tickets from Prague to Brno, and we got checked, but we had first class tickets, so no problem. But on the way back, we didn't buy the tickets because we didn't have time. We were in a rush. We almost missed the train, so we just jumped on because you can buy the tickets on the train. So we also sat in first class, but then nobody checked us, so we went for free in first class from Brno to Prague. Ah, that was very nice. Yes.
So I did get to visit Prague for the day. And one thing that's great about Prague is that it's so centralized, so everything that's important is within a short walking distance.
Yeah. So what did you see in Prague? What did you visit? So I heard. So you told me you bought a golem.
Oh, I did buy a golem. That was actually your suggestion.
You need a golem. It's the best souvenir of Prague, you know. So where did you buy the golem? And tell me the story of the golem.
Just at a generic souvenir shop in the Jewish quarter.
Yeah, did you go to the synagogue there?
Yeah, I walked by a number of them.
But did you go inside?
No, I didn't.
And why not?
I had a limited amount of time.
Okay, I see. Did you visit the Jewish cemetery?
No, I wasn't able to find it.
Ah, it's a pity. So what was your highlight for you in Prague?
The highlights.
Yes.
I'd say there was two. Visiting the main... There's like the main town square where you have a lot of medieval architecture. There's that famous astronomical clock, which unfortunately was under construction, so I wasn't able to see that.
That's a pity. Yeah, Benzelplatz it's called, I think, the square. Benzel Square, yes.
And then there's also this... A lot of beautiful Art Nouveau architecture. I forget the name of the building, but there's this famous Art Nouveau theater, which is right nearby there.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. Did you see the monument to Franz Kafka?
No, I didn't get to go to the Kafka Museum. I also wanted to go to the Alphonse Mucha Museum, but I had a very limited amount of time.
Yeah, Alphonse Mucha, who's that?
He's a famous Art Nouveau Czech artist.
I see. You mean architect or
no,
just artist?
No, illustrator, artist.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him. So I suppose he lived at the beginning of the 20th century, like 1920s, 1910s, yes?
I think so, or maybe the late 19th century.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, so you spent, I don't know, some hours in Prague, though, like what, 8 hours, 9 hours,
I
think?
I got there maybe about 6 hours.
Right, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, I think you went to the bridge, like Charles Bridge, I think.
Yes,
it's
I did. That's really that's really spectacular. I walked across the river.
Was it very crowded, full of American tourists?
Lots of American tourists. And Chinese tourists.
All right, because usually it's like everywhere in Prague at this time of year, in summertime. Wow, yeah. So... You were in Germany, so what did you visit in Germany? Only the town where we met, Riesa?
Let's see. I guess I'll have a few more comments on Prague. I covered the whole historic section of the city. We were talking a little bit about communist architecture, and one building that was really interesting... I think there was one building that really stood out, is there's this building... I'm not sure if it's a radio tower... or observation tower, observation deck, or observation tower, but it's very futuristic, and it looks like it was probably built in the 70s. And it's not right in the city center. It's kind of outside of the city center. You can kind of see it from the distance. But do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I remember seeing it when I was there. Yeah, it's very unusual looking, for sure. Yes. Did you find out what it is exactly?
No, I didn't. But you see, I also noticed that in Germany there's a lot of interesting radio towers that were built, that look like they were built in the 70s, that are kind of brutalist. Yeah. And you see them throughout the German countryside?
Yeah, they're everywhere in Germany, literally. Like, you see them all over the place. Yes. You mean those old radio towers, yes? So the concrete gray ones with like some UFOs sitting on top.
Oh yeah.
Some UFO looking disc thing. Yes. Yeah, they're everywhere. Yes. Yeah, I guess it's, I don't know, it was popular back then. I don't know. I don't think they're in use anymore.
And there's, or are they? I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah, me neither. Anyway, sorry, what?
There is some brutalist architecture in Prague. There's a, I think there's a famous hotel.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've got no idea. Which hotel?
I forget the name. There's like a few brutalist high-rises.
Yeah, but there was, I don't know, I'm not opposed to brutalism. You know, it's like, it has character, in my opinion.
Yeah,
yes,
I agree.
And I like, what I like is, I like the contrast between, like, to say, like, 19th century architecture, then you have some Art Nouveau, maybe some Art Deco, and then some brutalist building next to it. So it's very eclectic, and that's what I like. You know, it's not boring. It's not homogenous, like Paris, for example, because Paris is quite boring, in my opinion. I mean, it's nice, it's beautiful to spend some days in Paris, but it's all very uniform in terms of architectural style. But when you go to other cities, like, say, for example, Berlin, which was heavily bombed in World War II, as a result, you have a lot of different architectural styles, which, in my opinion, makes it more interesting. So you could say the bombing was almost a blessing in disguise, because it cleared the way for nice brutalist structures and other structures that came after the war. Well, not all of them beautiful, of course.
Yeah, I didn't get to visit any of the major German cities.
You got to do it next time, I guess.
It's okay.
And I'm sure you'll have enough time. So in the future. So yeah. So so you went from Brno to Riesa in Saxony. How many hours did it take you, approximately, by car?
Let's see. I think about 8 hours.
Okay. Well, okay. So how many kilometers it is, or how many miles? Do you know?
I forget.
I don't know. Probably. Probably like 500, maybe. I don't know. Yes. And in Riesa, I think you spent 3 days in Riesa. Yes, I think we arrived on the same day, but you arrived much. No, I think I arrived 1 day before you. Yes,
oh, I
arrived.
Right. I was only there 2 days.
Yes, I was there several days, more than two. I think 4, 5, 6 days I was there. Yes, because I took some excursions from there to Dresden and Leipzig. So, what do you think of Riesa, which is, I would say, a small town in Saxony, East Germany, former German Democratic Republic, population about 30,000, so it's quite small, and we stayed in the same...
Oh, 30,000? It felt a lot less.
30,000.
Really?
Oh, maybe 20. Well, I talked to some locals there, and they said, like, about 30,000, yes, maybe 20,000. But 20 to 30,000, I think, is the population of Riesa. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what I've been told by the locals there.
My impression of the city was that it was very kind of depopulated. All the streets were empty. There was something kind of eerie about it.
Yeah, but I guess most. I mean, it's a small town. So, and did you go to the pedestrian street, like the main shopping street? Because that one was pretty crowded when I was there.
I don't know if I did. I went to that Irish pub with you, but I don't think that was on the main street.
No, no. Main street, they have like a main street which is pedestrian, but the cars are not allowed, and you can just walk down the street, and it was pretty lively when I was there, to be honest. There are shops and restaurants and stuff, so fairly lively, the pedestrian street. The Irish pub, no, that was just like, it was a big street, but it was not the main pedestrian street. And when we were there, like, late at night, I think we, when did we arrive there? Like 8, 9 p.m., maybe later. So it seemed pretty empty, though. But then at the same time, it is a small town. And, yeah, and we were there with Johannes. Yes, Johannes, the Greek nationalist, my friend. And it was you, and who else was there? Your friend was there, right? Your German friend. Yes, so your German friend was there. My Greek friend was there. Johannes Schaaf was there. So Johannes Schaaf is the guy who propagates the white ethnostate. He published some books in Germany on the topic and gave numerous speeches. Also has several YouTube videos, now also with English subtitles. So, yeah, so what did you think of the Irish pub there, though? So, because I was told the next day that, because we're all like, we had some pretty right-wing discussions, I would say, and pretty loud in that pub, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I was told the next day by some other locals that the owner of the pub, which is the guy who served us, is pretty left-wing, like hardcore left-wing, doesn't like Nazis.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah, but he was pretty cool, though, like, because, like, he was still pretty tolerant, like, he didn't get aggressive or anything, and didn't try to kick us out or anything. Yes.
In the town, there is a Karl Marx Strasse.
Yeah, of course, because it's East Germany, naturally. There's also Friedrich Engels Strasse, I think. So, Marx's body. But, yeah, that's not surprising, though. And the main square, like, near our hotel, was called Alexander Pushkin Square, named after the Russian poet, obviously, because, you know, to show their friendship with the Soviet Union. So that's why they named a lot of streets and squares in East Germany after Russian poets, like Alexander Pushkin. And Marx, of course, because it was, you know, it was a communist country. And, it's just no need to change the name, because he's a very famous German philosopher. So you can keep the name Karl Marx Strasse, I think. I think the only, because I talked to lots of locals, like, because I went to several bars and talked to the regular citizens there, and they told me they had a Lenin Square also, but that one was renamed. It's not called Lenin Square anymore. Before, actually, in the Third Reich was Adolf Hitler Square, then after the war it was Lenin Square, and now they renamed it again, but I forgot what it's called now. I guess it's not so interesting.
And then later in Germany I did stay in Karlsruhe, which is in Baden-Württemberg, in the Rhine River region.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's where I'm from. Like, my parents live quite close to Karlsruhe in a small town, so I know the city quite well. So that's the Federal Republic of Germany, capitalist Germany, southwest Germany, so completely different picture. So, because the whole atmosphere, I would say, in West Germany is completely different from East Germany. Because in East Germany, like, I remember in Riesa, the town where we stayed, where the NPD Congress was, it's like, I would say all the locals I spoke to were all pretty much right-wing, or at least sympathetic to what I had to say, and at least not aggressive. Yes, so, all cool. Could drink your beer, talk about anything you want. Impossible in a city like Karlsruhe, the one that you went to in West Germany. Because it's like, West Germans are a lot more liberal, a lot more left-wing than East Germans in general.
I heard they have a Green Party mayor, which makes sense.
Yeah, well, of course. It makes perfect sense. Yes. Well, like, Riesa, where you stayed before you went to Karlsruhe, is in Saxony, and the AfD is the strongest party in Saxony, the only state in Germany where at the best results. So,
do you speak with a Badisch dialect?
Yes, when I speak German, some people say yes. I have a Baden accent, Baden dialect. Yes, that's what people say.
Well, Karlsruhe is really nice. They have a great city center area. It's very, very busy. Very lots of nice restaurants. A lot going on. Then you have the castle there, and the castle's on this park, and I think the park is actually an extension of the Schwarzwald, because the city is built on a kind of a fan-like grid pattern. So you have the city center, and then right next to it is the castle, and then that borders the Schwarzwald.
No, it's not the Schwarzwald. It's a different forest. Schwarzwald is like, I would say, at least 50 kilometers from Karlsruhe. Some other name, the forest. Don't remember the name. It's not Schwarzwald, though. Schwarzwald is a bit further south. Well, maybe 20-30 kilometers further south. That's where the Schwarzwald Black Forest begins. Yeah. But it's a different forest. I forget the name, though. But, yeah, the castle was mostly rebuilt, and almost 90% of the city, especially the center, is rebuilt because it was all bombed in World War II and mostly destroyed. But which is the case of a lot of German cities. But I think, the result, the castle you see today, is pretty good. I mean, for it being a reconstruction mostly. It looks original.
Yeah, it does look authentic.
Yes, so... yes, because they have this, like you said, as the fan structure, because all the streets radiate out from the castle, like a fan, basically. That's, how the grid looks like of the city in Karlsruhe.
And even... Karlsruhe has about maybe 250,000 people.
Yes, about... yeah, that's true. Yes.
But I noticed in most European cities, most people do live in apartments, and you only really see single-family homes if you go out to the country. But ways, it actually makes more... It's a more effective use of land.
Yeah, what do you mean exactly? Please elaborate.
It's a more effective use of land because in American cities, everyone has their own backyard, and I can understand the appeal to that, but the cities are so spread out, you have to drive really far to get places, there's all these pedestrian dead zones.
Yeah, but it depends where you live in the U.S. Like, if you live, say New York or Boston, I think most people also live in apartments there, especially in the metropolitan area, no? You're talking about Western cities Texas, California, where they're so spread out and people live in these small houses with their own backyard or garden or something like this. Like, do you live in your own house in California?
Yeah, I live in a single family home.
So you have a backyard?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you see that in Europe, even the smaller cities, most people live in either apartments or row houses, and then you do have single family homes, but they're not like American suburbs, they're more out in the country.
Mostly in villages, I think. Yes.
Oh, right.
Like one street villages, very popular in Germany, maybe two streets. Yes, you have a lot of houses like that there, but they're pretty expensive, I think, maybe not as cheap as the ones in the U.S. So, not as affordable, I think.
Then I did also get to visit Vienna.
Yeah, Vienna. I've been to Vienna once.
Only once?
I think only once, a long time ago, so I don't remember a lot of it. So, I remember I went on the big Ferris wheel, I think.
Oh, at the Prater, yeah.
I just remember the big Ferris wheel for some reason. Yes, yeah. It reminds me of the Orson Welles movie, The Third Man, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the spy movie, because it was also set in Vienna, like post-war Vienna, late 1940s, early 1950s. And I think in the movie it was also seen on this Ferris wheel. So that's why I remember it very well. So how do you like Vienna, though?
Yeah, the theme park Prater was really cool. A lot of... an old sort of vintage theme park. I have no idea when it was built, but it has a lot of cool signage, like neon. And you have a few places like that in the United States, but this was a lot more impressive.
Which places in the U.S. would you compare it to? Coney Island or something?
Or maybe the closest I can think of would be the Santa Cruz Boardwalk in California.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been to Santa Cruz. I was there several years ago. I have a friend there, and yeah, talking about the Lost Boys. You know, I think the movie was filmed in Santa Cruz. It's the one with Kiefer Sutherland with a vampire gang, like, you know, it's like some vampire.
Oh, right.
Teenage vampire gang. It was all Santa Cruz boardwalk. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess Plata, Santa Cruz boardwalk. Yeah, I can see the similarity.
And it's pretty impressive in size. You can see it from quite far away. Like, if you drive across the bridge that goes over the Donau, you can see it in the distance, all lit up.
Right. Donau is Danube in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to go back. Did you see any famous historic landmarks, like Mozart-related, for example, when you were in Vienna?
I did, but I was driving around really fast. It's hard to keep track of which building is which. But the one thing, it's hard to get like a lot of good photographs because Prague is so centralized. Everything is so condensed.
You mean Vienna?
No, Prague is so centralized. Vienna's not. It's not as spread out as a major American city, but it's more spread out than other European cities. So it's hard to get to see everything in like a short walk. Mm-hmm. I was there the first night I arrived by plane, and I went to Prater that night. I went there a second night, and I went out to a restaurant and had a schnitzel and beer and walked around. There's like a pedestrian zone that has restaurants and bars. And then the night before I left, I went to the train station, but they have a really cool futuristic train station.
Yeah, right. Well, I've never seen it, so yeah. I'll have to go to Vienna and check it out. Yes, Wiener Schnitzel. How do you like it? Because it's original if you eat it in Vienna.
I don't know if it's Wiener just has to be veal, or it was some kind of. I think it was a chicken schnitzel.
Okay, then it wasn't Wiener Schnitzel. But no. There's Wiener Schnitzel has to be veal. Then there's Schnitzel Wiener Art, which means Schnitzel Vienna style, which can be pork, or maybe, which usually is pork. So you just had a chicken schnitzel, so you didn't have a Wiener Schnitzel then. Because Wiener Schnitzel must be veal, otherwise it's not Wiener Schnitzel. Yeah, it's a pity.
I noticed in Vienna there's not so many medieval buildings like there are in Prague. It doesn't have that medieval street grid that Prague and even Brno has. It's a more, like, the streets are much wider, and the buildings look mostly from the 18th century.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think 18th, 19th centuries, because Vienna is an imperial city of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so it needs imperial grandeur, so the streets must be wider.
I mean, I haven't been to Paris, but Paris also has those wide streets.
Yeah, Paris, because I think Paris has the Haussmann architect, you know Haussmann, he pretty much like razed all the old Paris to the ground in the 19th century. And that's
under Napoleon?
After Napoleon, I think it was late 19th century, mid-late 19th century, when Haussmann, the architect designer, decided that Paris needs a complete overhaul, and they pretty much razed the whole medieval quarter like to the ground and built the Paris we know today, which is like this 19th century architecture that is pretty much prevalent all over the center in Paris. And like I said earlier, it's very uniform. It pretty much looks the same everywhere. Because that was the whole purpose of it. So it's all 19th century center of Paris. There's hardly anything medieval remaining. Not as cool as that. Not as radical as the Corbusier plan. Corbusier plan would have been a bit more radical even. Yes. Would have been interesting, I think. There's anything Corbusier planned to have like a 10 line highway or something like this in the center with like gigantic, huge open areas with grass basically and high rises, lots of monolithic apartment blocks.
And I think he wanted to preserve the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe, like, in the middle of these gigantic concrete structures.
But basically destroy most of central Paris.
Yeah, pretty much. Raise it to the ground. I mean, yeah, that was the idea. But that's what Haussmann did, too, though, in the 19th century, which most people don't realize, because in the 19th century, they pretty much destroyed all of medieval Paris, basically, and replaced it with what you see today. Yeah, so I don't know, different people have different ideas. I would have not really been opposed to the Corbusier plan. It's very daring, very futuristic, and it's different.
I don't support the Le Corbusier plan for central Paris, but I think it would be a great way to sort of revitalize a lot of these rundown, like, inner ring suburbs.
Yeah, like, which cities?
I'm thinking more of American cities where we have these inner ring suburbs that are really run down, and it would be great for revitalizing those, but I wouldn't support that for central Paris.
But give me an example of an American city that would need such a revitalization campaign.
Like, so, what? Let's see. For LA,
okay.
Area would be maybe the San Fernando Valley or the kind of southwestern portions of LA or the areas just south of the central city.
Mm-hmm. How could the Corbusier plan revitalize such cities?
Provide more good middle class housing, but also more parks, just more walkable, more aesthetically pleasing. A lot of those places are awful in the sense that they're congested with traffic and lots of sort of ugly small apartment buildings.
Yeah, I agree. I think they definitely need more green spaces. It's just not, I think in general, like, especially in the West, more so than on the East Coast in the United States. Like, in the West, like the cities are not very pedestrian friendly. Yes. Yeah, it's also in terms of infrastructure, like public infrastructure, public transportation, like buses, for example, like, or just public transportation in general are horrible in the West. And the East Coast is much better, like New York, Boston, you have very good public transportation, you have, like, I don't know, subway, buses every couple of minutes, but you go to, like, Austin, Texas, or maybe Los Angeles, you want to take a bus, I think you have to wait.
I mean, just the airport, when I was in Vienna, I could take a train from the train station to the airport and arrive there in only about 15 minutes. It's a nightmare getting to LAX airport in LA from either the west side or downtown.
Yeah, how do you get there? Was either your own private car, or do they have, like, airport express buses or trains in LA, I mean?
There's a train, but it takes over an hour.
Yeah, but Los Angeles is pretty big. I mean, it's much bigger than Vienna. So it's like Moscow, where I live. If you they have these airport express trains, also takes like 45 minutes or something. From the center of Moscow to the airport, because it's just much bigger. Because Moscow has a population officially of 12 million, and Vienna, I know, is like what, 1 million, maybe 2 million, I think. So is much bigger, yes. And I think LA is just in general very, 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 very spread out. Yes.
In Vienna, yeah. they're also building a lot of modern skyscrapers. Most of them are on the outskirts, but there's also building some new high rises near the train station, and some of them are actually fairly futuristic. But Vienna, there is a mixture of, like, the old and the new. They're not as rigid.
Yeah, so what do you think of this personally? Do you like it? Like, the mixture, the eclectic nature of it? Are you a fan of it? I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, I think it works.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know, it reminds me sort of like Boston. In Boston you have that too. It's like, you have these 17th, 18th century buildings, like small ones, like townhouses, but like wedged in between like two skyscrapers. Looks very bizarre at first, but after a while you get used to it. It's sort of like archaeo-futurist architecture. So the fusion of the old and the new. Yes, don't get rid of the old, but don't just copy the old, build something new, integrate it somehow.
But what's interesting is, in American cities, you can always find your way to the center of the city without getting lost by looking for the tallest buildings. But what's exactly. kind of confusing about a lot of these European cities, like Vienna, but also Milan, is they have these clusters of skyscrapers on the outskirts. So I understand the reason for doing that, because they don't want to demolish the historic core, but it also makes it, if you don't have a map, you don't really get a good visual idea of where the center of the city is.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. Yes. Yeah, usually, I think usually, like, in most European cities, you don't have skyscrapers in the center of the city. Yes. They're usually, like, away from the center. I think the only city that I can think of where you have a lot of skyscrapers, like, right downtown in the center of the city, is Frankfurt. In West Germany, Frankfurt am Main, on the Main River. Yes, and that's also why they call it Mainhattan, because the river is the Main River. So it's sort of like a wordplay, like Manhattan, because of the number of skyscrapers they have there.
Yeah, I didn't get to visit there, but from the photographs, it does look a lot like an American city.
Yeah, it's by design, though, because it's the financial center, so it's like all the banks are there, and insurance companies, international banks, all located in Frankfurt. So the financial capital of Germany is Frankfurt. So one of the main financial centers in Europe.
Constantine, okay. It was great talking to you. I look forward to having you on for the next segment.
All right, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.